All right, everybody, watch us light up the sky. Kidge is lit his fuse, and he is burning as we speak. And he's just so excited to go. He's ready to go. Robert, on the other hand, is in the other lane. His car is actually on fire, so we shall see what happens there. It's going to be an exciting night, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and sit back, relax. We're going to talk about girding our loins. That's right. Oh, it's just impossible not to have good energy and just be excited after listening to Thousand Foot Crutch, is it not?
Yeah. TFK is quite enjoyable.
Oh, that's from their new album, The End Is Where We Begin. So.
What?
Yeah, check that out. It's really good. And if you're
is that like a Mobius strip?
It is.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
Well, tonight we have started a new series on Blind Squirrel Radio. We start The Armor of God.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited about that. So we're going to take one piece of armor a week and discuss it. And tonight we're going to gird our loins with the Belt of Truth. It's interesting, I think, that the armor starts with the Belt of Truth and ends with the Sword of Truth, right?
Yeah, it does.
Kind of interesting. Yeah. All right, kids, well, you're up to bat. What do you got to say? You did your research, correct, on the
yes,
belt?
Yes, I did.
That we're talking about?
I even went back to the Greek.
Ooh.
Yes.
Oh, man.
That's always impressive. Uh-huh.
It's always I stayed in English.
So the verse we are talking about in particular is Ephesians 6:14, at least the first part of it, where Paul says, "Stand, therefore, having girded your waist with truth." That's only the first part of it. There's more, and it goes into the next pieces of armor in that. But I went through to the phrase, having girded your waist, because, you know, truth, yeah, everyone agrees that that's with truth and that sort of thing. But I was curious as to whether or not the belt of truth was actually a belt. So I went through, and the Greek comes out to two different words. There's perizonumi, maybe?
Okay.
And
oh, nice.
Osphus. And perizonumi means to gird around myself or dressed in readiness. So it has two different meanings there. And then osphus means either waist or loins. So it could mean to wrap a belt around your waist or to dress for action around the reproductive organ like a cup. So either one, I guess, could work. But based on how it is best translated, I would think it would still mean a wrap a belt around your waist.
Okay.
Well, thoughts?
Here's what I know. Mm-hmm. I have a recurring dream where I am at school and I am not ready to be at school. And it usually involves me not having girded myself. And so I know that feeling. You do not want to go in battle or school or out in public without being ready to do so, right?
Yeah.
It leaves
and
you
the
feeling
only thing worse than that is that situation also not having your locker combination for some reason. You've got to have that, and you don't know what time your final is.
But it's a very vulnerable feeling in that dream when your loins are not girded, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I luckily have never had that dream.
Oh, good for you.
So, yeah. Anyway, so to continue on.
Yes.
When I was a kid, I, being so obsessed with medieval history and that sort of thing, always pictured the armor of God to be like a plate armor and whatever. But Paul would not have known to write that to the Ephesians. So it would be best understood that the armor described would invoke imagery of Roman or Greek armor.
And I think that's very important to keep in mind as we move forward through all the armor, mm-hmm. is that we are talking about the armor of Paul's day. And which and now, in all fairness, this was not just Paul's day, but this armor was pretty prevalent, pretty unchanged for about 1,000 years.
Yes.
And so it would have been, widely universal at the time. And very accessible to us now, which I think is why God used this particular armor. Whereas the English armor that a lot of us think of when we think about armor, is relatively new and didn't last very long as far as usage was concerned.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And even at that, it was only the rich could have it, whereas the armor of Paul's day would have been on every street corner in those times of every nation, so all around the world. So I think it's very important. It's a very good point, Kidge. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So what I did is I went back and looked at specifically the style of Roman armor in specifically the first century, because it differed between 2nd century BC and the end of the Roman Empire and that sort of thing. So, mm-hmm. But in the first century, the troops would wear what was called a balteus, which there were two different types of balteus. There's one that they wore around the waist that was decorated and made specifically by that soldier for his own purpose. So each one was unique. And that one was used for carrying the dagger. And it had an apron. You know, you've seen pictures of those leather strips hanging down in front and back. It would have that hanging off of it. And then there was another balteus that would hang over the shoulder that would actually carry the sword. I made a specific note that because it is the belt of truth carrying the sword, it'd also be carrying the sword of the spirit, which because going with belts, here's my notes, I guess. In John, Jesus refers to the Holy Spirit as the spirit of truth. So that it creates this inseparable sort of image of the truth and the spirit not being able to be separated. So obviously the sword of the spirit would be carried by the belt of truth.
Excellent. When I teach this with the kids, I always bring in a piece of this, a thick piece of leather that's used, that I use. A lot of people use for their, tool belts, you know, and you can imagine that this is the kind of hardened, thick leather that would be, hanging from this balteus, and what protection that it would actually give you in everyday battle, or just walking through a field of brush or something. You could actually tell this does provide quite a bit, and it stops around the knees and it allows you a lot of freedom of movement and yet provides you a lot of protection. So it's really neat.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. The Romans were smart people. They had this stuff figured out, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. I think Robert had something to add.
Did I?
Did you?
Oh, yeah. One of the things I noticed was that the belt is not offensive. It's more of – I'm not even sure I would say that it's defensive. It's just basically the foundation.
It's utility.
Yes, exactly. And without it, I it's not like you could say, well, you know what? You know, I don't really have my belt. I'll just go into battle anyway. Well, you know, there's nowhere to hold your sword. You can't wrap all of the rest of your armor around you. It's all going to fall off, and you're not going to be an effective soldier.
Yeah.
So, I liked in John 17:17. You know, when we talk about truth, you know, it's just like in episode 1 of this show that the principles are all based on truth. It's the foundation of the house.
There you go.
Yes. Okay. And in John 17:17, you know, where is this truth found? It says, sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. And so it even says where that truth is found. So
excellent.
Yeah. Oh, and the only other thing about the soldiers is those leather strips, you know, that you were talking about, and I forget what you called them.
The belt is the balteus, and that was the skirt coming off of it.
The leather strips, not all of the soldiers had them, but the ones that had to be the most mobile and were like in the most amount of danger, they would have those. It would just be an extra, you know, amount of protection, but yet it didn't stop them from moving, you know, quickly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's like a leather hula skirt.
Yeah, right.
But so, I wouldn't say that to them.
I can imagine they had no hair above the knees if they were rubbing against those leather straps all day.
And I'm sure it wasn't like soft Corinthian leather.
No.
Ooh, Corinth.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Nice. Another thing that I thought that the point of this Baltheus was it allowed the soldier to be able to draw his sword at a moment's notice. Mm-hmm. And so going with the same idea of the spirit of truth being the Holy Spirit and that being inseparable from truth and that sort of thing, it's the soldier's not going to walk around with his sword in his hand. He has to put it away at some point. He has to be able to sheath it and carry it and have his hands free. So in order for you to have really have an effective sword of the spirit, you have to have a belt of truth. In 1 John 2:4, John says, "He who says, 'I know him,' and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him." So when you are not truthful, then the truth being the Holy Spirit in that case, and the truth is not in him sort of thing. If you don't tell the truth, then you don't have the Spirit. So I thought that was another foundational sort of thing, like Robert was saying, about it all holding it together, but it also being necessary for the Spirit to be there as well.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think that to address the readiness, the truth, girding yourself brings to my mind, you know, the readiness aspect of that, to being ready to move, ready to go into battle, and being so connected with the sword of truth that the sword of the Spirit, I'm sorry, that it calls to me the passage that the truth shall set you free, John 8:31-32, where I say, if you abide in my word and are my disciples, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And so we talk here about the soldiers, after girding themselves, could then, with the sword of truth, actually, they were free to go. Now, it's not advisable. I mean, you want the other pieces of armor as well. Mm-hmm. But all you need to move in the moment's notice, I mean, if you wake up in the middle of the night and the enemy is at the door, you gird your loins and grab your belt. I mean, grab your sword, right?
Yeah. In fact, the lowest ranking soldiers in the Roman army,
yes,
all they had was their tunic and their belt and their sword.
There you go. And so with that, you are ready. You know, you're ready. That's the readiness, the freedom to move, the freedom to go. And as we've walked through morals and we walked through our ethic, and you see this in the Bible. In fact, it even says where the Spirit it's talking about Jesus, and it says where he is, where the Spirit is, his Spirit being the Holy Spirit. Where he is, there is also liberty, and so when you have this internal ethic, you have internal liberty. You are now, you know, it sets you free, and that's what people. You know, people don't understand is like the more discipline that you have over yourself, rules are made for when you don't have discipline. The more discipline that you have, the more internal ethic you have, the freer you are. It's a paradox. And so, but I think this imagery of this belt really sort of exemplifies that. And all of a sudden you understand that it's this truth that I'm girding myself that gives me the freedom then to move, to go, to be ready for battle. That's all I got.
Yeah,
nice.
I heard this in a history podcast recently, and it was about this time. It was one of the armies that the Romans had to defeat. It was this, you know, huge, I think it was a German tribe, and they were huge and scary and everything. And one of the things that tribe would do is, to prevent a retreat, they would run long chains through their belts, and it would like lock everyone together, saying, look, yeah, you know, so a single one of us can't run, you know, and like cause a panic. And I know that you really can't take this whole Ephesians 6, you know, that far as this metaphor, but I just like the imagery of the truth extends beyond just us. And so then, like a church, you know, or a family can all stand on the same truth, and it can actually hold each other up. I just thought of that.
I like that.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm not sure that the Romans did that, though. So I don't really think it's in the passage. I just thought it was a neat image.
Now, the Romans were pretty mobile.
Yes, they were. Although what you could do, that's the shield. We'll save that. Okay, because it was a cool thing with the shield.
Yeah. I like the shield. Yes. Well, that's interesting. So that's good. Have we? Is there anything else?
Not in my notes, no.
Okay. Robert, anything to add?
Well, I just got to thinking about the soldiers and the period of time that this was written. There was a standing army. It wasn't where they had to like go into the fields and get all the landowners and have them, you know, stop, you know, messing with their crops so they can go fight someone and then they go back and then like disband the army. They had standing armies at this point. And so it was like you would just, you know, enlist kind of like we do today. And they were just always ready to fight. And so I like the image of, you know, that they pretty much always had that belt ready. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I just went looking for, you know, some place in the Bible that talked about, you know, that. And I found it in Proverbs 3:3-4. Says, let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. And that just told me that we need to always be girded.
Yes.
And it's kind of like muscle memory. When we need our first reaction to be going to the truth.
Yes.
So that it's just automatic, like a favorite song of ours. You know, if you like turn, you know, the radio on and it's halfway through your favorite song, you don't even have to wait, you know, for the next verse. You can just immediately start singing it because you've practiced it. You know, it's automatic.
Yeah. And this brings to mind a note that I had in that when a soldier was on duty, even though it's sort of like being on call, when a soldier was on duty, it didn't mean they had to stand a watch, which meant one thing, but you could be on duty and not be on a watch. So you could sleep, you could go eat, and yet you were still on duty. And what was interesting about that is when a soldier was sleeping, when a soldier was on duty, he had to be girded with this. He had to have his loins girded all the time. He could set his shield down. He could take his helmet off. He could put his sword by his side while he slept, but he had to stay girded. And it was the one piece he did never take off as long as he was on duty. So I think that speaks to what you were saying about us always being ready and having that and being steadied on the foundation of truth. And that's the thing with this armor. It's the girding is the foundation of truth, because not only did you put your sword on it, but they would also, when they would march, they would rest their shield, especially in later times when during Paul's era, that they would actually have a little notch on their shield where they could rest their shield as they marched on their belt so that they wouldn't have to. And then the smaller shields went on their backs, but the big nice shields, would they would actually hold them on their belt. So, it was just, I just thought that was interesting that it was found the foundation for their armor as well. But
totally utility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anything?
Batman would be nothing without that stupid belt.
Exactly.
That's right.
He's just a guy playing
punch guys.
He's just dressed up like a bat. That's all.
That's Mr. Bat to you.
Oh, gosh.
Behind the scenes here a little bit. Robert, I don't think you have your chat window open in the document. Me and Kids have been trying to talk to you.
Oh.
You're not there.
trying to give you vital information.
Here, here we go. Yeah.
What we really want to know is, what is that history podcast you listen to?
Oh, it's Hardcore History. I'm sure you guys have heard of it.
Yes,
I have. Is that the one that only updates every 6 months?
It's about every 45 days. Close.
Okay.
Yeah. He just finished a great series on the Mongol Khans.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. It's called The Wrath of the Khans.
That's so silly.
Star Trek humor is awesome. That was the best of all the movies, though. Is there, do we all agree on that?
And if that's a true statement, then that's pretty sad, because that's a boring movie.
What? The Wrath of Khan?
Oh, they talk about maybe that they're going to possibly do something, and then it's, you know, it's not until he screams Khan that anything happens. It's so boring.
Love that movie. Ricardo Montalban is awesome in that movie, and his fake chest. It's just awesome.
He actually was good in it.
Yes, he was.
But still.
Oh, my microphone. I think I just broke it. He tasks me. I love him in that. It was awesome. A little overacting on Shatner's part there, you think?
Well, that's the definition of Shatner. That's actually what you know. What the word Shatner means, if you go back to the ancient whatever language that is.
the one who overacts.
Oh. Yeah, that's
exactly. One who overacts.
I like them. They're fun. Leave them alone.
No, that's fine. They're fun. Yeah.
How do y'all think? How do y'all feel about the new series, the reboot?
I like it.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay.
We should see how they're going to play Khan in the next one, which is the next one that's coming up, I think.
What? I'm thinking it's not going to be
Into Darkness. Into Darkness doesn't have Khan, does it?
I thought that's who...
Into Darkness is Khan?
No. No, it's not Khan. He's someone else.
Oh. What do
I know? I'm wondering if they're just not going to, you know, tackle that directly, because it is such, you know, it is one of the better movies.
Iconic.
Iconic.
You're funny.
All right. So, but if y'all see, y'all haven't seen the new one's not out, right?
No.
Into Darkness.
No, it's not.
Okay. All right.
It looks good.
I hadn't missed anything there. And there's only been one of the new series, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes. All right. I hadn't missed anything. I'm up to date. Okay. Good. Now, another science fiction note for because we're all kind of, well, at least me and Robert are science fiction fans.
Really? Really?
you're a Star Wars fan, and you're a very, what do you call it? Uppity, vocal. Uppity Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
I'm more of just a science fiction fan. I like all the Star Wars movies, not just the first three. I'm just kidding.
Sure.
I'm just picking on Kitch a little bit.
I just don't like Attack of the Clones.
Are you excited about the new ones?
I am
pessimistically
hesitant.
Pessimistically,
really?
Not optimistic.
It's J.J. Abrams.
Right, and that's why I'm not like, oh, it's going to be horrible.
Okay.
And it's also there are going to be two spinoffs written by the guy who wrote Empire Strikes Back and co-wrote Return of the Jedi and also wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then the other spinoff is going to be written by the guy who wrote Mr. and Mrs. Smith and the Sherlock TV shows. The Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So you're pessimistically optimistic.
Yes.
Okay.
I just want everyone to just lower the expectations.
Yeah,
because that's what really ruins a good movie.
Can we not enjoy a good science fiction film without it having to be? I mean, as soon as it's out, they pick it apart. I have to ignore reviews.
Yeah,
so I can go enjoy the movie. Because I mean, come on, when I went and saw that, what was the Blue People movie? You know, the Blue People movie,
Avatar.
Right. I went and saw that and thought, wow, that was beautiful. I mean, it was such a good use of 3D. And it was one of the first kind of real live action 3D kind of thingies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, man, that was just fantastic. That was so much fun. I didn't think it was going to win an Academy Award. I just enjoyed the movie. And then the next day I'm listening to radio and they're just tearing it apart like it was the worst thing that ever hit the screen. And I was like, the hype, I mean, I agreed, the hype to pay off was a little high because it was, you know, Titanic, you know, and all this. But Titanic wasn't that good, if you ask me. The only reason Titanic was good because it had no hype leading into it.
Well, the big boat sank, and that was my...
You knew how it was going
to
end. It
took 2 hours to get to it.
Exactly. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Man, I had to go pee in that movie. All that water at the end. I mean, they timed it just perfect.
You were cold.
Realism right there.
Yeah. Cold and sitting in the front row. So that's not good.
Another science fiction note, which is a little exciting for me anyway, is a TV series called Under the Dome. It's a mini series. And it is based on a Stephen King book about a town that gets cut off from the rest of the world with a giant dome.
Oh, yeah. Chelsea's mom was talking about this the other day.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very Lord of the Flies kind of thing. You know, when you take away all accountability, kind of the worst of man comes out. And now the book was very adult. It was not kid friendly.
Duly noted.
Yeah, there was a lot of violence and some rape violence and
great
typical Stephen King language and for the bad guys. So it was hard to read, but it was based. I had to read it because, one, I like Stephen King books, and two, it was based on the town that my brother lives in Maine, a little small town in Maine called Bridgeton, and that's where the whole thing was written. The town is named different in the book, but all of the things and all of the places and all the stuff is exactly the same. So, he could send me pictures of they're here now. So he would send me a picture of that, and it was funny. But I'm excited to see that Under the Dome because it is a good story and it'll be on TV, so I'll be able to actually enjoy it without all the bad stuff, right? Hopefully, yeah, right. They cut out at least most of the language on the television.
Speaking of interesting things to watch,
yes.
Aether Swift and I went to go see the movie Warm Bodies, which is zombie romantic comedy.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's actually funnier than we thought it was going to be. Yeah. So,
well, anything involving zombies is pretty funny. So,
no,
we could have had free tickets to go see that, but I'm like, I don't want this to be one of those movies where, you know, all the teenagers fall in love with it and I'm, you know, the only one in the theater that's a guy that is, you know, well, an actual adult.
It wasn't Twilight, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
We don't have Team Deadhead and Team Missing Arm, right?
No.
Okay. It was just funny. It was good. It was better than you thought. Okay. There's another zombie movie coming out. I can't believe they're making this into a movie. World War Z. Anybody read that?
I know you read it.
Yeah, I read it. Did you read it, Robert? Or you don't read, you, Robert?
I love reading. I just don't understand zombies.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
They're dead, and they want to eat your brains. What's hard to understand?
But,
I don't.
But why? It's pretty easy. Why is there more than one story ever written about it? It's been done. Move on. Okay. I just don't get it.
All right. So World War Z is coming out. That's kind of exciting. But the book was all based on interviews after the fact. It was all about interviewing veterans of the war, and it was very logistical. There wasn't a lot of that was kind of my only negative thing about the book. There wasn't a lot of storytelling. It was all very logistical. Exactly what happened, when, and where. And what made it interesting was the different people that were interviewed, and the fact that I was actually listening to the unabridged audio, and they had different actual actors playing the different parts, which made it very much more interesting to listen to. I can't imagine actually reading the book but I don't know how they're going to make it into a movie, so I'm interested to see that. But the book was kids friendly, by the way. So,
well, that's good.
What else?
I've got several more things to talk about if you guys don't.
Hit it, Kitch.
All right. So, have I ever spoken about the YouTube channel Blimey Cow? I think I might have.
No.
Maybe.
Blimey the, Cow.
Blimey yes, Blimey Cow.
Okay.
They are a three. There's three of them. Two brothers and the wife of the older brother. And they make weekly YouTube videos commenting on, like sarcastically commenting on teenage culture these days and how it's just so stupid, or just how we don't, how teenagers don't put thought into their culture. It's things like how to live a better life, how to be a better person, and like it comments on some of the things that we do in church that we don't really know why we do it, but it's just like the Christian culture sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And one of them is one of their latest videos was how to write a worship song in 5 minutes.
Oh, I'm going to love this. I don't know what it is.
Uh-huh. And it basically says, you know, you really only need three chords. So just play those three or four chords over and over and over again. And if you want to get really adventurous, just play a D chord and like move your pinky around. and then you need to have some really spirit-filled lyrics, like, you know, and things that rhyme. So like praise and grace rhyme together, and desire and fire. So, and just basically you always need to have something on fire in your song. and so they actually made a worship song in 5 minutes, and it's actually surprisingly accurate to most worship songs out there these days. So,
and that's scary. The reason why I don't like a lot of the modern worship songs.
Yeah, here we go. Right.
Here we go with the hymn only.
No, no.
I'm Robert Hymn Only Harrington. Only. Yeah, Robert Hymn Only just Harrington.
The writing is usually not very good, that's all.
Robert's going to Church of Christ.
I agree. Some of it's interesting. We went to Christ for the Nations, which is a college in Dallas that my wife is an alma mater of. Once a month they have a worship, because what they really do is train missionaries, train preachers. They're a seminary. They train music leaders. They also train people to work and do lights and do soundboards and, you know, anything you could possibly do in a church. They train, or they offer some type of associate's degree or even bachelor. They have bachelors and doctorates for the pastor stuff. They're at the college, okay? And so that's pretty much what it's all about. And so it's a neat place. But once a month, they have a worship service. And so Faith's been bugging me to go to this thing ever since we got married. I have managed to avoid it for 12 years, and I had to finally go. So we went Friday night, and it is a two – and the reason why I've been avoiding it. It's a two-hour worship service. And I don't mean it's, you know, one guy preaches and another guy preaches and you sing a couple of songs and another guy preaches. No, it's 2 hours of singing.
Yeah, I can't do that.
2 hours of standing and singing. Well, actually, it wasn't hard to do because it was really good. They have it down. I mean, they know when to make you sit down and when they do, they'll do a solo, and then they get you back up and move you around, and it was really good. It was fun. I can't wait to actually go back next month, and I'm going to take some of the kids from school. But your comment about worship songs is kind of funny, because most of the songs I sang were really good, and they were from other sources. Most of them were tragedy. Most of them we'd heard. They sang several hymns that they had. It was a rock band. I mean, it was really good rock band, but they had taken hymns and sort of updated them, and those were really good. I mean, they really did a rocking version of Surrender All that you can't imagine Surrender All done this way, but it was really good. And but at one point they had like this, they had a girl come up and she was singing, and she was talking while she was singing, kind of encouraging the crowd. I'm thinking, now she's just making stuff up. I mean, she was talking about when we praise God, we enthrone Him. And he's going to sit enthroned on our praise. And I'm like, really? Is that in the Bible somewhere? I don't remember reading that.
Wow, we're pretty powerful.
I didn't know he needed us to praise God. Yeah. I didn't know he needed us to build his throne on. And I thought maybe there was a reference, because there's a lot of references in Psalms that, you know, you read over when you're just reading the Bible, and you read kind of read over them because they're just Psalms, you know, and they're very poetic, and they don't, you know. And so maybe I thought there was a reference to that somewhere, and I looked it up, and I couldn't find anything. Google said, uh-uh, ain't in the Bible. So it was interesting, and her song was interesting as well, because it was all about breathing and things being on fire. So yeah, it was
exactly.
And my church sings an interesting. Have y'all heard that song about the earth meets the sky in a sloppy wet kiss? Why is that in my praise song? I don't wonder, why, do I have to sing that part? I don't really think I want to sing that part. It's not part of my praise.
There was one at a camp that I went one to one time, and I think it was a new song, and it may have been written by one of the people there. Okay, but let me know. It was "I Want to Dance with You on the Beach" in the, you know, something or other, and it was about dancing with Jesus, on the beach, and it was like a romantic thing, and it was so creepy, and I refused to sing it. I have never felt that way ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. So I'm not going to pretend that I have.
Exactly. I remember what hers was. It was you delight in me, O Lord. And it was over and over and over again. You delight in me, O Lord. Oh, you know, it was okay. Like, wait a minute. Why am I singing that? That doesn't make this. I mean, there might be a passage that says that somewhere, that he delights in my obedience or something. I don't know. I tried to look it up on my phone. I couldn't find anything.
But I didn't, you have to look it up before you'll sing it.
Yeah, I did. Well, I didn't feel comfortable singing it. You're just exactly like you were saying. I just, certain things, I just don't feel like I need to be singing that.
Yeah. Right.
But there was an interesting part where he says, there's a song and he talks about, and obviously it was a song that everybody there knew, but I'd never heard, about shouting to the Lord. It says, we will dance, you know, we will raise our hands to you in worship, and we will shout to you. And everybody there shouts when they say that. And I didn't have a problem with that particularly, but he did actually take time in the middle of the song to kind of stop and say, this is why we do that. Here's the scripture that talks about this, and the fact that it's been a historical part of the Jewish worship is to shout unto the Lord. And he talked about shouting at the walls of when the Israelites were gathered around Jericho, and how they shouted to the Lord in praise. And and so we shout. That's why we, you know, that's why we include this in the song, to shout to the Lord and in praise. And so I thought that was interesting that he actually took the time to say, this is why we're doing this. It's not irreverent. It's not irreverent worship to shout. So
nice.
Did I lose everybody? Okay.
No. We're still here.
I'm here.
Okay. All right. Well, anybody else got anything else?
I still got more if you want me to keep going.
Kidge wants to talk about words existing, and I don't know if I want to get into this. Stupid.
At what point in time are we talking about? Is this in the future or what?
Well, it depends. Because as we're talking about it, it becomes the past.
Yeah, it's a very ethereal conversation. He brought it up on Facebook the other day, and I thought some of his friends' heads were going to explode.
My entire point behind it was to mock those who come up with things like that.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't.
Yeah. So
I answered it fairly seriously at first, and then as other people began to answer, I was like, I kind of regret my answer.
It's because you have serious conversations on Facebook.
That's true. I do. I should.
I only ever post things on the internet so people can know how hilarious I am.
Okay,
that's what Twitter's for, Brad.
Exactly.
That's
a good plan.
I don't do. I do. I only get news from Twitter. And then once a week, I send you a message, you and Kidge a message saying, okay, we're on tonight, or we're sick, or something. That's the only time I Twitter. I read news, and then I don't do Twitter. Twitter doesn't make sense to me. I can't follow conversations on Twitter.
Yeah, me neither. Not really.
But Google Plus is the best. And when the world catches up to it and Gaul moves over there, everything will be fine.
Yeah, right.
No, but I answered. I said to Kidge, I said, words are conceptual, so I don't think they have existence or being. And then that's like two guys later said, I don't even remember what he said now, something about Yeah, words exist. I forgot what he said, but it was like, oh my gosh, is he 12? It was, what did he, I don't even remember what he said. I wish I could find it, but it was very, it made me realize that Kidge was just trying to get these kind of reactions and I should have just shut up.
So he won.
Yeah, he won. He scored. Kidge won Facebook that day.
Exactly. I won. And also as a fun side note, everyone needs to look up hexaflexagons.
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 What is
that? Hexaflexagon.
What is
that? That's it.
Yeah, I posted a video in our notes, but it is a paper object thing, kind of like a Mobius strip where you can fold it on itself and it only has one side. But it is a paper thing that if you fold it in a particular way and then unfold it in another way, instead of it having two sides, it effectively has three sides, only it, except it's flat.
Robert, do you understand a word that's coming?
You just blew my mind.
Dude, it's the coolest thing ever. I've been playing with this one I made like for the past few days.
You've changed my perception of reality.
I am,
you have no idea.
Watching it now. So is it all different kinds
the
of
video
shape?
That I linked. Well, no, it's there's a square one and a hexagon one. The video I linked to you has like a few minutes of history of how it was invented by college students at Princeton and stuff like that, and by people who then became famous physicists and stuff. But yeah, it's crazy. And then there's hexaflexagons, which is two-sided but has like nine variations. So,
oh my.
I'm still having a problem with the definition. It's flat but three-dimensional.
Yeah. And then you can like take a tortilla and put like beans and guacamole on it, and it's a Tex-Mex hexaflexagon.
Oh boy, here we go.
There's a video of that on YouTube as well.
Tex-Mex hexaflexagon. Oh, that's too funny. Okay, well, I think that's quite enough for everybody's brain tonight. So thank you all for joining us. Go check out Tex-Mex hexaflexagons. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. All right, everybody. Well, vios con Dios.
Vios con Dios.